Dr. Wilner, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me here again. I guess last time was okay.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I'm really glad you could join us again because, you know, in addition to being a practicing neurologist and a teacher at the University of Tennessee and obviously the author of The Locum Life, I find you to be one of the more thoughtful physicians and thoughtful voices I've come across online. And I think you are someone who regularly engages with some of these bigger picture trends and bigger picture developments in healthcare. And I think that's evidenced through your own podcast, where you are the host and producer of the Art of Medicine, and also through some of your writing that I've come across on Medscape and Kevin MD and Doximity and so forth. So really happy to have you back. And one of the reasons why we wanted to have you back is to talk about, one of the biggest shifts happening in healthcare right now, which is, of course, artificial intelligence. So you had written an article that I came across very recently, and I encourage our listeners to go check it out on Medscape. But in this article, you described a visit to a doctor's office where you saw a physician, and this particular physician seemed, you know, totally checked out. They barely asked any follow-up questions. They really didn't take any notes. And you described her almost as bored or even detached. So to kick us off here, I'd love for you to tell that story in your own words. What happened in that exam room and what impact did it have on you?
Like everybody else, I've been kind of awed by the potential of AI, but usually disappointed by the substance, although I think that might be changing. But I'm sort of tuned into that. So in terms of what happened, the story, and I have to camouflage a little bit some of the people because I live in a relatively small town, but I go to medical visits with family members whenever possible, just so I can interpret what's going on. My family, they're not medical. I can ask different kinds of questions. And then I know what happened because in the past I would ask a question and, you know, when my family member came home and they would say, oh, I don't know, or she didn't say anything about that. Or it's like, well, if you were there. So I just go. So this was the situation when we went into the exam room. And let's just say it's my cousin. So my cousin's sitting there and the doctor comes in the door. Hi, how are you? Very polite, a little cool. And we actually know this doctor. We've seen her before. And but she never really comes into the room. She sort of hangs out in the door frame. And she's standing there with her arms. I don't know if you can see her arms crossed, you know, as opposed to the sort of open embrace, you know, body language, leaning against the door and asked all the appropriate questions. What's happening? How long has it been going on? You know, have you had this before? Do you have other symptoms? She did the review of systems. That's what we call it when you see a patient. She very competently and listened. But my cousin is sitting, you know, not on the exam table, but on a chair in the corner. And the doctor is all the way over here, half out the door, never really even entered the room. Then the doctor goes, well, I think we need to do an ultrasound and some blood tests, and I'll see you back after those. And then starts to leave. And it's like, whoa. You know, I don't like to say too much. It's usually, I mean, I need duct tape, right? Whenever I'm in a setting, because I'm going to say something, but I try and hold back, but I couldn't hold back. Finally, I said, well, aren't you going to do an exam? You know, I mean, these days, the physical examination is sort of less and less because we have great imaging technologies, but it's a starting point. You know, you do the exam. So, and sometimes you find unexpected things, which changes what, you know, imaging you're going to order. And it's just part of what you do as a physician. And the doctor says to me, oh, no, it wouldn't really help. We'll just get the ultrasound. That'll be better. And that was just so antithetical to sort of where I'm coming from as a professor teaching that you must do the exam. And frankly, I've done examinations on people who came in with one complaint and I found something on that. It's like, whoa, there's a lump over here. Did you know about that? No, I didn't know. So you actually find something that has nothing to do with a chief complaint. And then the second issue is one of the roles of a physician, maybe the most important one, is to make the patient feel better. So how do you do that? Well, number one, you be competent, right? You know what you're doing and you're going to deliver the right result, order the right test, order the right treatment, prescription, whatever it is. That's how you help the person. But in the meantime, you try and be nice to the person. You try and be comforting to the person. You try and add hope to the situation. You put it in context. Oh, I understand you've been having this, but you know, women your age have this all the time. It's usually nothing. But until we do the test, we won't know for sure. So I'm a big fan, you know, for the last 50 years of physical examination. So I was just shocked that this doctor who just decided that, well, this is just a waste of time. We'll just get the ultrasound and go from there. So she kind of missed the big picture. You know, maybe she's burned out. I don't know what her problems are, but she was not doing her job the way I see it. So that's what I wrote about, because I was really stunned. And of course, we requested another physician for the follow-up. And the new doctor was also quite efficient, I would say, but approached it in a much more acceptable way. So it's not that we're so picky, nobody's good enough. But that was just so extreme. I felt it warranted an article. Oh, yeah. And the bottom line was, well, gee, AI would have done better, because you wouldn't expect AI to reach out and put its little, you know, robot arm on your shoulder and try and comfort you. Someday that might happen, but it's a little bizarre as of, you know, 2025. But you would expect AI to ask all the right questions and order the right tests. And not pretend, you know, to be a human being. And I felt that this doctor would have been better replaced by AI, which is not my usual conclusion, by the way. And we can talk about that. But that's the story.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into my next question here. You know, it almost seems a little funny, a little humorous to say this, but not too long ago, it used to be that, you know, if you had an unexplained illness or a particular condition, maybe a weird rash or a lingering cough, you could just Google it and you could go to WebMD or you can look at patient forums and try to diagnose yourself and ascertain as much information as you possibly can. But now people can just use AI. They can use ChatGPT, like you mentioned, and they can have a discussion with this AI chatbot, type in their symptoms and have a dialogue, maybe get back a list of potential diagnoses, treatment options, even follow-up questions to ask your doctor during your visit. And all of this is very fast, mind you, right? No need to schedule an appointment, sit in a waiting room, file an insurance claim. You can just pop on any of these AI tools and engage in a discussion. Obviously, that's not the same as real medical care, but it does feel a little different from what we've had before. And I think it's starting to kind of blur the lines between, you know, traditionally what's been a role for the doctor. So how do you think this access to information kind of changes the patient-doctor dynamic? And what happens when the patient walks in already having had that AI conversation and already having a lot of that information in their back pocket? What does that mean for the traditional patient-doctor dynamic?
So ideally, physicians appreciate and enjoy patients who are informed, because if they understand, say you have a patient, I have lots of patients with multiple sclerosis. So if they understand that this is a chronic disease, that we don't have a cure, but that medications can slow it down and make it better, that's going to help a lot in terms of adherence. They'll understand why it's important not to, you know, mistreatment doses. They'll understand why it is important to tolerate a medication that might have some side effects. So ideally, it can advance the doctor-patient relationship if the patient is knowledgeable. The other thing I want to emphasize is a real problem with AI is that one thing that physicians do that AI does not do, and is that physicians take ownership of the problem. So when you go see a doctor, you have a fever, you have a rash, you have a stomach ache, it is that doctor's ethical responsibility and by virtue of his training to either solve that problem or refer you to someone who will solve that problem. There is doctors stay up at night trying to figure out what is wrong with that patient. Am I missing something? AI does not do that. AI takes no responsibility, right, for follow through. You search something, it says, this is what you got, and off you go. If it turns out AI is wrong, what is your recourse? AI doesn't care. Can't sue AI. So a physician will take responsibility for the problem. And this is a long tradition and something that physicians can offer. Physicians have always played a role because of their human qualities, not because of their access to science. So even if AI takes a bigger portion of the science, physicians will still be necessary.
I would love to actually dive a little bit deeper into this particular topic. I mean, you're kind of talking about how AI is taking on more cognitive tasks in medicine, right? Tasks like diagnostics, even tasks like documentation or charting, being able to be a scribe, tasks like patient communications being increasingly offloaded to AI. I saw this recent study that that had oncology patients rating chat responses, and they were blinded responses, but they received responses either from a chatbot or from an actual physician. And they were asked to rate, you know, how empathetic was that message? And it got me thinking, you know, as AI takes on more of these cognitive tasks in medicine, things like reasoning, you know, pattern recognition, you mentioned diagnosis in radiology. It got me thinking, you know, what qualities are really going to matter in being a good physician, right? Like, is it going to be softer components like empathy and communication and emotional intelligence that kind of take precedent or become more important than even something like clinical skill? How do you think the role of a physician is going to evolve, and what qualities will really matter in being a good physician with the introduction and adoption of AI?
I want to answer a different question first.
Sure.
You mentioned scribe. So I was at the American Academy of Neurology meeting a couple months ago, and I watched a demo of a scribe, they call it an ambient scribe, specifically created for neurologists. And I interviewed on my program, The Art of Medicine, one of the co-founders, because I got interested in this, because I did the demo and the thing actually works. All you do is turn it on. It records like we're having a conversation. It records the whole thing. But then what it does through, they call it large language models or something like that, it's able to organize the conversation into the templates that we use, history of the present illness, past medical history, medications, allergies, social history, things like that. It can organize it even if the history of the present illness was at the end of our conversation or scattered through the middle. The large language model is good enough that it can reorganize it and make it a template. So I see that as a real positive role for AI, where it's relieving some of the administrative burden on doctors. But in terms of replacing, as you mentioned, emotional intelligence and the cognitive aspects, I see physicians going to be around for a long, long time, hopefully using AI as a tool, like we use a calculator. You know, nobody says I'm going to use a slide rule. I don't believe in calculators, right? It's kind of, that'd be dumb. So I even use a calculator. And it's true, I'm a little rusty with my math tables because of it, but it's okay. I see AI as a really exciting tool to let doctors do more of what they're good at.
Yeah, it's a great point, and something I actually want to dive a little bit deeper into, because, you know, from an outside perspective, from my personal perspective, it kind of feels like we're at a little bit of an inflection point here. You know, on one hand, AI promises huge efficiency gains, and you kind of talked about how AI can be used to kind of reduce the administrative burden, have physicians spend less time on paperwork or less time on documentation and charting. Obviously, AI provides faster access to information. I think all of that is great. But I think on the other hand, there is a little bit of a little bit of skepticism, a little bit of worry that, you know, what happens if we hand over, or what do we lose if we hand over too much to AI? So I think there's kind of this version of the future where AI helps us provide better care. But then on the flip side, there's another version of the future where, you know, maybe AI help erode something essential from healthcare. So what I wanted to ask you is, you know, what does the best case scenario look like? If we do get it right, if we do get this AI adoption right, what is the best case scenario? What would physicians gain, and what would the larger healthcare industry, healthcare system gain from this adoption?
Well, I think best case scenario, AI picks up all the administrative tasks. I mean, why should I be writing a refill for a patient who has epilepsy, who's been on the same drug for 10 years and needs a refill? I mean, that's insane. And having to go into the computer, wait 2 minutes for open up, get the patient's name, check on the drug, check this, they've changed their pharmacy, click on this. It can be 15 minutes to refill a prescription. And I should just be able to say, hey, AI, refill Mr. Jones Tegretol. And if the pharmacy has changed their phone number, AI will figure it out. I shouldn't have to do that. Similarly, the note, if an AI scribe can do it, I'll just read it over, make some little tweaks, it's done. All the orders, we do now use order sets. You come in with a stroke, there's certain things that we do. And of course, we can add to that or not do some of them. But I could see AI playing a bigger role in order sets, even making suggestions. Gee, you didn't order an MRI with contrast, are you sure? So I see AI doing a lot of these administrative functions. I mean, of course, and then there's all this, pre-authorization, peer-to-peer. I mean, all of that is just a waste of time. And then insurance things. There's no reason for doctors to be involved with any of that. I've done quite a bit of medical mission work. And everyone who does medical mission work says they love it. And you say, well, why do you love it? You're going to some remote area with minimal facilities, with uneducated patients, usually patients who may not even speak your language, and yet you love it. What's the deal? And the deal is that it's all patient-doctor relationship. You communicate with the patient, you have a translator, you do what you can for them, and then you move on. There's no overhead of scheduling, of billing, of pre-authorizing, of following up, of emails. There's none of those things that most physicians are not excited about.
We've covered a lot of ground today talking about some of the risks and promises of AI, to even how AI is reshaping the role of the physician in the exam room. If you could leave, you know, doctors, our listeners, just one piece of advice on how to navigate this moment, how to navigate the integration of AI into the exam room, what would that one piece of advice be?
Oh, I would say don't be afraid of it. I remember when we introduced, computers into medical practice and electronic medical records, there were people, oh, I don't want to do that. It's like, well, it's okay. I would not be intimidated. I think all physicians should focus on developing their own physician skills. The better doctor you are, the better you will be able to use whatever resources become available. But I would not be concerned about being replaced.
Dr. Willner, thank you so much. Always a pleasure having you on the show.
Andrew, thanks again for letting me speak to you about current events in medicine. Very exciting.